Hello, this is a football fans podcast by the people behind CelticUnderground.net, and today I, Harry Brady, will be discussing with Hull Boy the fantastic 5-0 thumping of Astana.
Baby, 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 baby.
Requests for songs that have got great intros or cover versions that are coming in thick and fast. I haven't quite decided which ones I'm going to do, basically because I'm trying to pull this podcast together relatively quickly. I need to see which ones of the list that people have sent me are on my iTunes and then quickly download them and stick them on. For ones that aren't on my iTunes, I will get them and stick them on in another day. I just don't have time just now. Anyway, so I'm trying to get this podcast up and out because Hull Boy and I are discussing the fantastic 5-0 thumping of Astana, and we then preview the Kilmarnock game and the Astana home leg. So I want to get that out in time before the Kilmarnock game on Saturday. If you've got anything that you want to get into the podcast that's a recommended cover version or a song with a fantastic intro, or preferably both, or any new music, you can email in podcasts@celticunderground.net. We also have had brilliant articles sent into us. If you want to get something up on the site, fancy yourself as an author, again, email it in and we'll stick it up, provided you're not saying Harry Brady's a fanny. If you, anything you want to talk about, get it on the, get it over to us on podcasts@celticunderground.net, or you can tweet at Harry Brady CU, at Celtic Rumours, at Hullboy, at Stephen_Ford_2, at Lucky Moore 1, at Marco Cooper, or any of that. Or you can go on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady, and this is me chatting to Hull Boy. Hull Boy, how are you doing in the City of Culture?
Fine, thanks Harry, and very happy after last night.
It was magic, wasn't it? Where do we start?
Well, I think we start certainly in my head with not seeing that kind of result. I think I was going into the game thinking that this was going to be very, very tight. I would have been obviously happy if we'd kept a clean sheet and maybe got one or two goals, but I wasn't looking anywhere beyond that. But to score five and win so convincingly was really excellent.
Do you know, there was interesting phases to the game. So I'll start off with the team. Was the team lineup as you'd expected?
Yeah. I didn't have any doubts about that. And I think, there's been a little bit of criticism, maybe by people in the media. I know Chris Sutton was banging on about it as well, about playing near Beaton in the centre of defence. And he's maybe had one or two moments. But actually, if you break down most performances, most players maybe have one or two moments in a game, depending on where you are on the pitch at the time, on what position you're playing. Obviously, it looks a bit more dodgy and worrying for incidents even. But you know, Brendan knows his players. He knows what they're capable of. Whatever people think of Beaton as a footballer, he's got a lot of experience, and I think it would have been wrong to kind of put Asia in at the back.
And I thought, actually, it was an interesting comment from Brendan after the game, where he said, I know what my players are capable of, and Beaton has made mistakes, but he makes less mistakes than many other centre-backs. And I think what he's referring to is that point of Beaton got a lot of criticism for what could have been a penalty to Patrick Thistle, because he was in the wrong position for the cross in, Then he takes the ball virtually off Gordon's fingertips and then fouls the guy. So in one move, he made three mistakes that two of them could have cost the goal. But we've all seen centre-halves make those mistakes sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was just going to say that for me, I felt that we've been more solid in terms of a defensive unit with Beaton there than I have done with Sviatchenko in some of the big games, either domestically or in Europe. You know, I think Beaton's ability to read a game is pretty good. His passing is decent. And there's something about a midfielder playing at the back who actually understands what the job is at, you know, in the, you know, 2 to 4 players that are ahead of him. So
and domestically we play against teams who, if they are going to attack us, their tactic will be get down the wings, get a cross ball in, or more likely let's see what we can get from a set piece, let's see if we can what we can get from the second ball. You move into the Champions League and perhaps the pot 4 and pot 3 teams, when they're playing the pot 1 and pot 2 teams, might also be thinking, let's see what we can get from the second ball and the set piece. But let's be honest about it, we're going to be pot 4 or pot 3. We are one of those pot 4, pot 3 teams. We're going to be playing against teams who, Barcelona put, what, 2 people, 3 people in the box at a corner kick?
Mm-hmm.
They're not going for that cross into the box, dominant centre-half needs to deal with type of football. Mm-hmm. So having a footballer at the back might be in a better proposition.
Yeah, and I think the only other thing to say about the overall lineup when I saw it was that obviously Rogic was back in and Cham was starting, and we'll maybe say a little bit more about both of those two, but I had absolutely no worries about them being in the starting 11. So
with the
pretty,
game,
pretty happy with the lineup as it was announced.
So the game starts, and first 15-20 minutes, they had a lot of the ball.
They did. They did have a fair bit of the ball. I think for me, it was a night when. I think if you remember last season when we were still going through the qualifiers, Brendan kind of almost made a little announcement to the support to say, you know, stick with us, don't get on the players' backs, because it doesn't help us at all. And I think kind of from that moment, everybody took that on board. But I think last night you could sense the nervousness and the importance of the game, and I think that was reflected in some of the Celtic players in those first 15-20 minutes, and also in the support as well. So, you know, the support went through the usual kind of pre-match things, you know, absolutely excellent atmosphere, but almost as soon as the game had kicked off, I detected a bit of flatness.
Mm-hmm.
Which we haven't seen, you know.
Well, I tell you what might have contributed to that additional nervousness of support, and I've spoke of support who've been getting used to it, and I spoke to someone else today who told me that their experience was the same. So in front of me at the game last night, there was 4 or 5 guys, you know, good supporters, enthusiastic, whatever. I'm not being critical of them as supporters.
Yeah.
But they've not sat in front of, you know, I'm in a season book, whatever, not sat in front of me before.
Yeah.
They were getting very, very agitated when we were passing it out from Gordon to the back, passing it sideways across, as we do every single game. They were getting very agitated. One guy in particular, every time it was passed back to Gordon, kept saying, "Oh my God," in that fashion, and they were all through the first 15-20 minutes in particular, get it up the park, get it right up the park.
Yeah.
And I thought, if you know, it struck me that they hadn't, just to finish off, it struck me that they hadn't been going regularly to see that we do not get the ball up the park.
Yeah. And I think for me, you know, like it's almost kind of going back to that "in Brendan we trust" phrase. I'm quite happy, even though we were not at our best in those 15, 20 minutes, I can actually see that the team is still set up in the right way. So, you know, you get a little bit edgy when you're watching the game, you know, when you see that and it's still nil-nil and there's so much hanging on it. But, you know, I wasn't unduly perturbed. I think, you know, the Griffiths header wasn't there, you know, which he should have got on target. But even that, you see, maybe, you know, that was just a little bit of nerves. And, you know, players know what is at stake. I mean, they're still human after all.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing I was starting to think round about the sort of 15, 20 minutes, that the way that they were playing might have been better suited for McGregor being in instead of Rogic to break that up. Rogic sort of more lumbering style of moving between people who are passing the ball about, as opposed to McGregor style.
Yeah, possibly.
However, the counter to that about why Rogic was starting ahead of McGregor was, even in that 15, 20 minutes when they were having more of the possession, every time we were facing them and running at them, they either fouled us or the Griffiths chance. We looked dangerous. Every time we got a chance to face them and run at them, we looked dangerous. And they didn't. It was actually my brother commented that their manager before the game had commented on he hoped his team could keep their discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could actually see because they didn't seem to be able to stop us without fouling us.
No, well, actually, I mean, as the game wore on, only because they did have a bit more of the ball in that opening phase, you didn't see the full vulnerability of their defence. But actually, once the ball was beyond their midfield bank, and Celtic broke that down, then they were very, very poor defensively. You know, and the combination of Griffiths, Sinclair, Forrest, you know, kind of, they really did kind of pull their defence all over the place.
Yeah. And there was a bit early on where the guy next to me was, Paul, was commenting that he didn't think their keeper was the greatest. And that maybe we should have a bit of a go at their keeper. And I did think it was interesting. The goal's all sort of coming from quite a tight angle.
Yeah, yeah.
Across the keeper. That
I was just going to say that proved to be correct, didn't it?
Yeah.
He was terrible. Very poor goalkeeper.
Yeah. The ball's, the angle that they were at, that he should have been not getting them in. So talk us through the first goal, Rogic's goal.
Well, do you know what? It was strange because it had that kind of like feeling of the cup final winning goal, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
That, you know, he just went on that run, and you just thought there are times when Rogic he gets in his stride with the ball, and you genuinely think that the ball is glued to his boot. He just seemingly has that ability to really, really kind of do some things with fantastic close control. And of course, you know, once he'd done the run, but once he got into the penalty box, the switch from his left foot to his right foot was just absolutely sublime. It really was exquisite. So obviously then he was beyond the defenders, and it was just a question of getting a shot in. You know,
we were quite surprised at the game when it came up on the board as OG. Because I thought the ball was virtually in the back of the net when the guy hit it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're in the north stand, aren't you? So basically from your angle, you would probably be seeing that as though it's going into the back of the net, you know, of its own accord. So
yeah, it was only when I saw it on the telly afterwards that it was... Although was it not Sinclair was running in at the back post or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the thing is... I've seen it again on the telly, and I think that the defender is trying, he knows what's happening, and I think he was trying to give it a bit more momentum to clear it out, you know, over towards the our left wing, if you like, because he would be aware of Sinclair that were coming in. So, but yeah, absolutely fantastic piece of play by Rogic.
And then I felt once that happened, the game was starting to change.
Yep.
We then went more on the front foot, and they were a bit more defensive. So then we had Sinclair's second goal.
Yeah, and I think the thing about that is the kind of importance of the timing, really. I mean, I know it's an old cliche, but you know, it's been said so many times. If you score a goal just before half time, you know, it completely changes the dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, even though we were one up already, because an opposition coach is probably already thinking about what they need to do in the second half. If it's 1-0, but of course, if you get a second goal and make it 2-0. That completely disrupts the thinking.
And again, at the game, the amount of space that Sinclair seemed to be in, your immediate reaction was he must be offside.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the game on the big screens at half-time, they showed you Rogic's goal, and they showed you quite a bit of the build-up from Rogic's goal. Sinclair's goal, they only showed you on the replay from the point that Sinclair already had the ball.
Oh, right, OK. Top work from Celtic TV.
Making sure that any bit that might show there might be dubiety about its onside or offside bit is not showing in the ground. And, of course, as you say, that then changes their coach. You're then in the Gordon Strachan Art Media Bratislava dilemma.
Yep.
Do I settle for 2-0? And at least I've got something to go home with. Or do I try and grab that away goal that completely changes the tie? But in trying to grab the away goal, I risk going to 3 and then causing a real problem.
Yeah. And I think, and that was reflected kind of in the second half a little bit. Because I think Celtic, they obviously didn't switch off, but I think the made sure that they weren't going to concede, you know, in that kind of first 10-15 minutes of the second half, you know, which I think was kind of vitally important, really.
Yeah, and it's that thing, you know, as a supporter that you start to 2-0. If we can just get one more in the second half and keep it to 0 and be 3-0, that would be great.
Well, that's what I was thinking at that point. That's what I was thinking. And I think the only thing for me is that I think one of the reasons why we went on to be so convincing was that we got the third goal relatively early in the second half. You know, so it's, what was it, 60th minute, something like that. So I think then you as an opposition, you know you were beaten. You know that you're not coming back in any way from that scoreline. So
you were also thinking a bit of Hapoel last year when we went 3-0. Was it 3-0 at half time we went in?
Yeah.
At Hapoel, and then they pulled it back to 3-2 before we obviously made it 5-2.
Yeah.
But how those two goals just made the second leg so nervous. Before I get on to some things about once we were 3-0 up, so what did you think about the referee not stopping play for the head knock?
Well, you knew that it was a bad injury. My initial reaction was that it was a foul by the Astana player, and obviously that proved to be the case because he got yellow carded. And I thought actually, and it's not really been commented on, but I thought it was a really dangerous challenge because I think, you know, that way where two players go up for a ball and there's kind of a head clash, and sometimes you can almost tell from what the player is looking at as to whether there's intent there.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually thought the Astana player, he you know, as a professional, he was nowhere near going to get that ball at any point. So I thought that was a deliberate, you know, you can almost call it a headbutt on Rogic. So in that sense, I thought, well, justice was done in terms of the referee continuing with the play. You know, and again, a lot of professionals now will say, oh, well, technically the referee should have stopped it because it was a head injury, and players' health and well-being is paramount. But you know, I was just glad that they continued to play on. I think the other thing about that goal is, and I think there was a pattern. There's some things emerging under Brendan Rodgers, which it's just like little subtleties, and they were kind of evident in the game last night. Griffiths running off the ball,
yep,
is improved greatly. And I think the other thing about Griffiths' game is, if you remember when he was getting his 40 goals in a season, it was a little bit because of this is the Lee Griffiths show.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, and we saw it last night, he is a much more unselfish player. So something that instinctively would have taken on himself in the past, he's now prepared to play in other players for a better goal-scoring opportunity. And he did that with Sinclair's second last night, and he also did it with Forrest's as well.
I thought it was a personal insecurity element that he believes he's a striker, and so strikers have got to score goals. So if he doesn't score, that's a problem. And I know that one of the frustrations of Celtic coaching staff was if it got to about 60 minutes in a game and Griffiths hadn't scored, he would actually start to be a liability because he'd then start shooting on sight.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what we think of Griffiths, that's just a little bit of the immaturity in the guy that we see. Because he is a throwback in that respect. You're absolutely right. He's a striker. I'm a striker. I just want to score goals. But Brendan and the team, they've obviously had words with him about that. And the fact that he's responding in such a positive way, you know, is really great.
So, I thought that the playing advantage from the referee was fantastic, because if you look at it, the way that we were attacking, the way the ball was going, the speed of everything, I think he made an assumption of this will either be a goal, a corner kick, a clearance or a by kick, but there will be an end to the next sequence of play within the next 10 seconds because of the way we were going. Consequently, he could just let it go for that extra 10 seconds to see, you know, it's fairly obvious, Sinclair's through, he's going to shoot. So he's either going to score or ball go off or a corner, whatever. And that means that he's then got an opportunity to naturally stop play at a point. I actually thought it was fantastic refereeing. Just give it an extra 10 seconds. Give it 10 seconds.
I didn't have a problem with it. I think the other thing just about that goal, small things, aren't they? But obviously, there's a big celebration at the third goal. But if you watch it again on the TV, Lustig doesn't go up and celebrate with the rest of the team. Lustig goes straight to Rogic and celebrates with Rogic, who is still kind of like...
I saw that at the time. He was lying right down, and you could see he was right in his face, and it was almost as if your unconsciousness is worth it, mate, because we've just scored.
And I think there's just little things like that that actually show you, and I know some of the players have spoken about it at press conferences, but they are really all together, and you know, it's all for one and one for all type of thing.
Absolutely. And then we get on to the fourth goal, where for me there was just three bits of class in that goal. The ball from Encham
is just absolutely supreme. That lad is just going to be something else. You know, some people say, oh, you're making judgments too early. He's better than Wanyama. He's got the physicality of Wanyama. He's got the control. He's got the passing, but he's got more pace and he's got more inventiveness than Wanyama. So Wanyama was always a bit more of a kind of a sitting midfielder. Mm-hmm. But Enchamp is going to open up so many things for us. He was absolutely superb last night. And his pass for that fourth goal was just stunning.
There was a bit in the second half where the ball was played to him and he was moving towards the north stand and three Astana players were closing round him. And one was pulling one arm and one was pulling the other. And he was holding them both off. And then the guy came in behind and the referee gave a free kick. But he was, the three of them were, one was coming in from behind and two were pulling an arm each. And he was holding them both off. It was also his upper body strength to do all that.
Yeah. Well, there was another point in the game, forget when it was, when he just kind of completely dummied a couple of Astana players out of the game because he looked as though he'd been closed down and he looked as though he was going to make a square pass to Brownie, I think. And he just completely pirouetted and he'd lost the two Astana players. And I think that was, you know, another pattern of the play last night, that once either Rogic or Ncham had got beyond that kind of bank of midfielders, then the attacking options really opened up for Celtic.
Yeah,
but he was my man of the match last night. I thought he was tremendous. And if we get performances like that, then 21, unbelievable.
It was fantastic. So there was his ball, then there was the control
by Griffiths.
Then there was the run by Forrest.
Yeah.
And then the point we've just been making about Griffiths, that he might, a year, 18 months, 2 years ago, have used the Forrest run as a decoy run to pull a defender off to allow him to cut inside and try with his left foot.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He played the pass through.
Yeah. I think the other thing for me as well is that, okay, we're going about on Cham's pass. The other thing about Griffiths, maybe I'm being a bit harsh on him here, but in the past, if he has tried to play players in, his actual passing ability and his touch hasn't always been that good. But his pass last night, even though it was only a short pass, it was inch perfect.
Yeah.
Because Forrest didn't actually need to break stride at all.
And then, actually, in terms of angle to goal, it was not dissimilar to Forrest's angle against Rosenberg.
Yeah.
In terms of tightness. And again, exactly. it just shows you the ability of the players that last crucial game, he rifles that into the top of the net from that angle. This time, he slides it past the keeper.
Yeah. And I think the only other thing to say there is, you know, maybe the keeper should have done better.
He should have done. He absolutely should have done. But between the third and the fourth goal, getting back to your point about a lull in the atmosphere at the beginning of the game, I did notice between the third and the fourth goal a bit of lull in the atmosphere as well, and I put it down to nerves as the support, because at 3-0 this is utterly fantastic. At 3-0 you're thinking, you can't see a Brendan Rodgers team going to somewhere like Kazakhstan, maybe to Barcelona, but not to Astana, and losing four goals without reply. So at 3-0, you're thinking, we're pretty much through.
Yeah, and what you're also thinking as well, the nerves come from, what if they do get a goal?
Yes, exactly.
Because they only need to win 2-0 at home in the second leg.
And we're all thinking back to Israel last year.
Yeah, but again, I was saying earlier about the subtleties of change and development of the team, and I think Brendan, I mean, he's touched on this himself, is that he's actually saying that he's in many respects he's a better coach than he was when he was at Swansea and when he was at Liverpool, because he's benefited from those experiences.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know some of the detail that he's getting at there. But actually, if you recall some of those early Rodgers teams, one of the criticisms was, well, his teams may score five, but his defence may well concede two. Mm-hmm. And I think what Brendan's worked on, presumably with Chris Davis and others, is that his team now, whoever, regardless of who the 11 is or the 11 that they finish up with in any game, they're a lot tighter as a defensive unit. And there's as much emphasis, well, maybe not as much emphasis, but there's more emphasis on making sure that they don't concede.
Yep.
And I think that was evidenced in certain phases of the game last night, where it wasn't particularly a question of Celtic taking the foot off the gas, but it was just actually making sure that they kept the shape and their discipline, and that nothing silly happened to allow Astana to get a goal at any stage.
If you look at, if you compare, so here's Brendan Rodgers, Rafa Benitez and Klopp, first 99 games as Liverpool manager. Klopp has won 50, Brendan Rodgers won 55 and Benitez won 56.
Right.
Benitez lost 25 and Brendan Rodgers lost 23, Klopp lost 22. But the goals bit for me is the big standout. Benitez scored 145 and conceded 80. Klopp scored 179 and conceded 105. Brendan Rodgers scored 211 and conceded 123.
So right. Okay.
They were 1.79 goals a game, 1.45 goals a game, and Brendan was 2.11 goals a game as manager. Yeah. Goals for. So your point about he played an attacking style of football. So yeah, it's that thing of that they say, isn't it? You learn more from your mistakes.
Yep.
And yep. He's lost his job at Liverpool. The statistics since he's left have demonstrated that he didn't do any worse than Klopp, and actually probably did better than Klopp.
Yeah.
But his issue is he conceded too many goals.
Yeah. Well, he's still relatively young, isn't he, as a coach, but he's probably in his mature years as a coach now.
Yeah.
You know, if we keep him for a long time, you know, he's going to be fantastic. And I know it's only one result in Europe, you know, where we've scored five goals, but actually You're beginning to think, do you know what? You know, we are virtually through to the group stages now. Maybe we can do something in the group stages this season.
Well, I mean, in terms of him as a coach as well, there was Stevie Gerrard was saying on BT Sports that he'd spoken to Brendan beforehand, and Brendan was talking about playing two number 10s, which, you know, you can see when we were attacking, it was basically three at the back with Beaton, yep, Simonovic and Lustig. Tierney was very far up. So when you then see, yep, that's because Sinclair, I mean, Sinclair's usually want to cut inside anyway, but when you see, yep, that Sinclair's then being told to be one in from that,
yep,
alongside,
yep,
Rogic,
yep,
just those marginal tweaks that we often play 4-2-3-1, mm-hmm, with it goes to a three at the back when we're attacking because Tierney goes up the wing. But to just marginally tweak it a bit so Tierney's just fractionally further up the park and Sinclair's just fractionally further in.
Yep. Yep.
I think by some distance, Brendan Rodgers is the best coach in British football. Certainly the best British Isles coach, born coach in British football.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I couldn't agree more. I just, you know, I've said it since he came, and, you know, I mean, proof of the pudding is in the 13,000 people who turned out to welcome him when he came. But he is a fantastic top European coach. And the thing is, I mean, okay, you talk about, you know, where he's from. He could coach in any European league, he would have a top class team competing at the highest level. You know, whether it be La Liga, Bundesliga, Serie A, he really is that good.
He absolutely is that good, and the players seem to understand him, and he's obviously discussing how to play football with players on a tactical level,
yep,
but, you know, without decrying footballers, mm-hmm, some are brighter than others because they tend to be, everybody's told you you're a talent, so leave school at 15, maybe, you know, not pay so much attention at school. Others will be a wee bit more sophisticated. He's obviously then, the added bit is the man management skills of being able to give that tactical information in a way that is sophisticated, probably, for the more intelligent players, and less sophisticated fashion for the less intelligent players, but in a way that all 11 players on the park can understand what's required of them and where they should be.
Well, Chris Davis touched on that in one of his interviews last season, and he was saying one of their jobs, you just don't think about football in this way. Well, I don't anyway, but it's obvious when he kind of says it. But essentially, they assess each of the players in the squad as to what amount of information they can carry,
yep,
and what they can take on. So you have to make an assumption that Griffiths can't take on much information. But I think Chris Davis did. I think he cited Scott Brown at the time and saying that Brownie can take on so much information, and that is so important because there are certain roles in the team where, in the modern game, you would be expected to have, you know, this bank of information in your head around how that game is going to be played.
Yes, yeah, so the at half time as well, I was saying, God, wouldn't it be great? You're 2-0 up, and I was saying, wouldn't it be great if we could get five, and then you could actually have a second leg of a final Champions League qualifier and be completely relaxed, sitting watching with your feet up.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, we scored a fifth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Icing on the cake, well, 2-3. In fact, you knew there was going to be about 5 minutes injury time, so you knew there was 7 or 8 minutes still to go. And again, well, the keeper could have done better, but there was a deflection. So,
yeah. Well, I think if you take those last two goals, I think a lot of that just demonstrated that Astana, you know, they were just completely out of gas. And again, that shows the kind of fitness regime of Celtic, because they were just overrunning it. Astana by that time, and the final goal was a kind of product of that. I think they gave the ball away, didn't they? And
yeah,
Armstrong recycled it. So, you know, and it, you know, it was good for him to get on the park, you know, with all the kind of speculation about his contract, etc. So
yeah. So, we get the five. So, can I, the $64 million question, are we through?
Not yet. There's a second leg. No, I mean, a lot of being... Well, there are two things, really, if you wanted to put up some rationale as to why Celtic, you know, may kind of mess it up. But they won't, you know. One is the travel,
yeah,
and the second is the 4G pitch. Well, again, you know, Celtic went there last season, so they know what the travel regime is like. So everybody behind the scenes will have all the preparation laid out.
We stay on UK time the whole time we're there.
Yeah, and I think the other thing for me is that. The 4G pitch, you know, for some other clubs in other leagues, that might be more of an issue. But Celtic are used to playing on artificial surfaces.
We'll be playing on one the Saturday before, you know, on Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. And that will be a poorer one as well, because the one at Kilmarnock was not very good. And I think, you know, again, artificial surfaces these days, if you look at the way in which Celtic want to kind of retain possession and keep the ball, then actually artificial surfaces are not really a problem in that regard. Obviously the ball runs away a little bit, you know, it doesn't slow down with the grass, but yes. But if you've got the players who've got the control, which we have, it's not really a problem.
The thing that surprised me last night in the press conference after the game, the Astana coach was asked, is the tie over? Now, you're expecting the sort of normal, well, it will be difficult, but anything's possible in football.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we will give it our best shot. And we certainly, the most important thing is we want to put on a show for the home fans to compensate for what happened here today. Something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out and says, "This has really surprised me." Well, the most important thing is, we want to try and win. I don't want to lose.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not talking about, well, you never know and all that stuff. He's just talking about not getting thumped in, at home and then getting humiliated over two legs.
Yeah. Well, and that tells you everything. And I think, you know, again, you hear Brendan and Chris David saying that, you know, that they prepare explicitly for every game and they prepare to win every game. And maybe they will change their regime now that they know they're going through a 5-0 from the first leg. But at the same time, I wouldn't put it past them that they want to put out a winning team for the away leg.
Well, on that, we've got two games now coming up that I'm sure the thinking about what we might need to do team-wise for that might have changed within the coaching staff at Celtic. You know, if it had been 1-0, 2-0 to Astana, they might have been thinking differently. So, do you think our thought process as to what players will be getting fielded at Rugby Park and then Astana might have changed?
It's difficult to say. Because I think, if anything, Brendan's maybe got more dilemmas this season than last season, particularly after the League Cup performance by what was essentially a reserve team. Mm-hmm. So I think he himself will probably think a little bit more about whether he rests certain players and brings in people, you know, like Miller or Ralston, people like that, who did very well the other week, because he's got confidence in their ability, you know, to just slot in there and do a good job. I mean, essentially, the last thing that he'll want, last thing we want, is for our unbeaten domestic record to go at yeah. Kilmarnock. So he will pick a team that makes sure we don't lose that. I'm absolutely convinced of that. The Astana away game. He may pick some youngsters to give them some experience of playing in a European away leg.
That's what I wondered. I wondered whether he might take the opportunity, not field the team that played against Kilmarnock, but whether he might take the opportunity for Ayer to play another European yeah. game, or for Ralston yeah. to get a game at right back.
Yeah.
Something yeah. like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the people that he probably would have given a game to, if he was fit, would have been Kouassi.
Yes.
Because actually, up until he got injured, Kouassi was also looking, you know, quite good.
He was looking excellent in the Kilmarnock game.
Yeah.
And I'm told he's like for like for Scott Brown.
Yeah.
But yeah. Actually, what I was told was he's like for like with Scott Brown, but he's a technically better player.
Well, yeah, and no disrespect to Brownie, who is, you know, he's still performing to such a high level. But some of these players who, you know, like and Cham, Kouassi, you know, they will have a different set of technical skills because they've been brought up in a different football environment. Just stands to reason.
Yeah, so we've got Kilmarnock on Saturday and then Astana on Tuesday. So I want your predictions for scores and scorers in both those games. And it's difficult, I know, because we both think he may make changes to the teams, but he might not. If he does make changes, we don't know which one he'll make most changes to, and we don't know what the team will be. So taking all that into consideration, what's the score and who's the scorers?
Scorers is different. I think we'll beat Kilmarnock comfortably. So I'd probably go for 3-0.
Okay.
I think one of the new unwritten aims this season will be to concede as few goals as possible, as well as scoring as many as possible.
I think you're right. You
know, the kind of clean sheet thing. So 3-0 for me. And I'll go with, I'll assume that Forrest and Sinclair both play, Griffiths and Sinclair both play. And I'll say Sinclair with a couple and Griffiths with one.
Okay, and in Astana, what are we going to do?
In Astana, I think we'll win 2-1.
Well, that would be excellent.
And I think it will be 2 own goals.
Well, so the brilliant start last night, 3 shots on target, 5 goals.
Yes, exactly.
So we're going to have no shots on target and 2 goals. Right, with that, Hull boy, I will say that would be very good. And then I'll get you back on to who do you want in the Champions League group stages question.
Yeah.
With that, well,
I was talking to a pal of mine today who's he's a big Barcelona fan. He lived out there in the 80s. And we were just chuckling that there's that possibility again of being drawn against each other.
Yes. Well, I'd like Real Madrid just for something different.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
not had them since 1980, so that'd be good.
No. Yeah, good.
Anyway, with that, Hull boy, I'll say thanks very much.
Thanks, Harry.
Cheers. Just so you know how this whole thing is put together, I still don't know what songs I'm putting on, because actually I'm recording this at the same time as recorded a bit right back at the beginning, if that makes sense to you. Anyway, Celtic FC Foundation, don't forget, they're now enrolling for the Sleepout. So if you fancy adding to the general fantastic goodwill that is about the club at the moment, and you fancy sleeping under the stars at Celtic Park and raising cash for the Celtic FC Foundation Christmas charity and raising awareness of homelessness, get on the Celtic FC Foundation website and register yourself. If you're getting a sleeping bag, see if you want to leave one behind for the Invisibles charity who are left them. Fantastic game. Get your emails into podcast@celticunderground.net. Go on the website, and I will by that point have decided what the music is that underlines what I'm talking about now and what was at the beginning. This is me, Harry Brady, saying thank God for Brendan Rodgers. Good night and God bless. Good night. I am the end man.